Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
From the over-the-top mobile studios down in San Antonio, Texas, of all places, I'm George Thomas, and we are on the line with Jamie Van Beek of Washington State, who just finished a pretty big event. Jamie, thanks very much for taking the time to chat with us, and tell us what you just did.
Thanks, George. I just got done doing the Dirty Kanza XL down in Emporia, Kansas.
I love hearing that with XL because I have so many friends who've gone out and done Dirty Kanza, the double century, and are just like, oh my gosh, this was the hardest thing I've ever done. It was amazing. And you actually did that and added 150 miles onto it.
I did. Last year I did the Dirty Kanza 200 and loved it. It was my first time in Kansas and just loved the people of Emporia and the race and the gravel. And it was eighth woman overall last year, first woman to come in that wasn't a pro. And I thought, heck, if a 47-year-old mother of three who has a full-time day job can do this, I can try this Dirty Kanza XL 350.
So how did that work? Because, I mean, Dirty Kanza's already, it's not a lottery, but they get more entries than they accept. So what happened with the XL?
Yeah, with the XL, you had to actually apply. You had to submit a resume and be selected, and that took place back in December. And I found out the 2nd of January that I was one of the 75 that was selected to race the Dirty Kanza XL.
Do you know how many of those 75 were able to finish?
It started out actually with about 80 riders or so, and it finished with 42.
Wow, so almost 50%.
Yeah, it was a tough course. They really made it tough and challenging, and then you threw in the intense heat on the second day. It made it a tough workout for sure.
So speaking of working out, you work with Coach Brian Ecker. How did your training change from the 200 to the 350?
It changed a lot. There was a lot of things that I had not done before, one of them being riding my bike 24 hours straight overnight with maybe just a couple of stops for food and water. Brian really showed me how that was done, took me out on some epics where we did ride 24 hours straight. I did three of those with him. The first one I barely survived. I remember just limping home in Bellingham and being totally shattered when I got in my house and crawling into bed thinking, how in the world am I going to add on an additional 150 miles? Because that was only 200 miles. But with each one that Brian took me on and worked with me, I got better. And then the last one was about 3 weeks ago. I went to the Metau that I love. And Brian had set up a really challenging loop course for me. And I started in the afternoon in the heat in Winthrop and basically rode 24 hours straight as if I was doing Dirty Kanza XL to prepare my body. And also I was kind of looking at what would work and what would not work and making adjustments to my bike and to my gear that really paid off big time at XL.
So these were 24-hour rides that were on gravel. I mean, he really went out of his way to design some courses for you.
He did. Brian Ecker is a legend in the ultra world for a reason, and he made a very challenging course for me. There's a lot more elevation than what I saw in Dirty Kanza XL, but he tried to mimic the same type of rolling hills, the same type of terrain, kind of putting me way out there in the woods all by myself alone so I could really get a sense of what that would feel like if I had a mechanical up in the woods by yourself, unsupported. You got to fix it yourself. So it was a great, he set up a great course for me.
Sounds like Brian needs to start an event out on some of these Van Beek courses.
He does. We got to get him back into racing.
So what was it like then as far as your mental preparation for the 200, which you really, I mean, you hadn't done anything like that before. So then going into the 350, was that more intimidating in a way because you knew what you were getting yourself into?
I would say yes. I mean, really your biggest fear carries your greatest amount of growth. And so it was a big fear. And Brian said to me before I said yes to this, I have to really want it. Because for me, it's really not about talent. I'm not a talented bike rider, but I'm somebody who loves to ride my bike and I love to put in the effort. And so it was different to train, and I did have to overcome a lot of fears about myself and limitations about myself and limitations that other people put on you that you don't even know. I remember a couple years ago somebody said to me that you're not a climber, and I remember thinking, really? How do you know that? Are you going to come with me and climb some hills? And so mentally I really had to remember the joy. I think I'm fortunate that I really love to ride my bike, and so I just love it out there. And with every hard challenge, I get growth out of, and it changes me as a person. And I try to remember that in the moment and have fun. And I definitely had fun in Dirty Kanza.
I love what you said just a few sentences ago about Brian saying you have to really want it, because I can't think of how many people have ever said, I can't believe you do this stuff, you know, for no money. And I'm always like, money isn't, you couldn't pay me to do this. That's not enough of a motivator. It's got to be from inside.
Yeah, you got to really want it. It was a lot of crazy training and crazy prep, and I'm thankful that I have a family that supported me. And, you know, you miss lots of things. I missed a lot of dinners. I missed some breakfast while I was out there on those 24-hour epics. And, you know, you have to, you know, really, yeah, really want it. And also for me, I have three girls, and I wanted them to see that as a woman, there's like, kind of chapters to your life. There's your marriage, and then you have kids, and then you got your career, and so you kind of always have to put yourself in the back seat. And for me, the biking was about finding myself again and bringing myself back in the driver's seat and kind of figuring out who I am again. I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm a teacher, but I'm also a woman who loves to ride her bike and go after things.
So you get to the race. Did you, how did it fit in with the 200? Did you leave earlier? Just tell us kind of the logistics of what went on at the event itself.
Yeah, I arrived a couple days early to kind of do some recon, and we got to the hotel, and as soon as we got there, there was a tornado warning, there was flash flooding, rains, and I was just looking at our hotel room going, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? So the course was underwater there for a while, but they had us start the afternoon before the 200 at 3 o'clock, and I have to say that the turnout was unbelievable. Like, I've never seen anything like it. Like, people really came out to cheer us on and to wish us luck. They were lined the streets. They were on the overpasses, the bridges that we went under. It just was unreal, actually, the amount of support that the people of Emporia and the Dirty Kanza riders came out to wish us off, which was pretty fantastic.
Were there sag stops along the route, or did you have to carry everything that you needed?
It's totally self-support.
It
you
is.
Can't accept any outside support. You could help each other as racers if, like, somebody needed a tube or some. You know, you could supply support that way, but you couldn't accept outside support. You had to fix all your own problems out there. There was three stops at a gas station where you could pull off and buy Gatorade and get some candy bars or whatever it is you needed in these small places, and then travel on again.
So tell us about, really pedal us through the race with you.
Well, really, to look over at these people, I'm at the start line with Matt. I've got Will Cox, an amazing world-renowned ultra endurance racer, and I'm just thinking to myself, what am I doing here? And we started off as a fun little group there for the neutral rollout, and then 5 miles, it was game on. And everybody was racing. We got to the gravel, and not too soon after the gravel, there was a guy in a mountain bike in aero bars in front of me that reached down to, I don't know what he was doing, but he ended up crashing in front of us, and we all stayed up and kind of, he was okay. But that kind of shook us all up right in the beginning. And then it pretty much broke up into smaller groups. It didn't take long before we were all kind of in groups. I kind of moved my way through groups. I was trying to think, decide, act, keep kind of leapfrogging forward. At like mile 50, I was with a gentleman that spoke no English. He was hanging on. He was struggling, and gave him my wheel, and we were together for, gosh, probably about 20 miles, and all of a sudden we're going up a hill, and my shifting kind of goes crazy, and he yells, "Stop!" And so he yelled it so loudly that I just literally stopped in the middle of this hill, and he saved me because my derailleur had rattled itself loose and was about ready to fall off my
wow.
bike. So I reached down and tightened that back up. Then I just kind of kept moving through the groups, and lots of people were watching my dots on the screen and sending me texts of inspiration on my bike computer, which was really fun to see. Then we hit the night, and I absolutely love night riding. It's one of my favorite things to do, and I just made heyday in that night. The temperature dropped from 90 to 74 at night, and it felt like a nice cool breeze is what it felt like. And there was some tailwinds in the night, so I just really hunkered down in my aero bars and just went for it and kept leapfrogging my way up to new people that had been dropped off from the group before. I met two gentlemen in the night, Mike and Morgan. Mike is a military guy. He has an incredible story of why he was at Dirty Kanza XL. He's on a single speed. Amazing. I met the two of them and rode with them for a while. And then I kind of picked it up, and I was really trying to catch the lead woman. She was about a mile ahead of me. So I was working hard. One of the challenging parts at night was they had us do this really crazy descent, and it went kind of in this hole that looked like Mars. Nothing but big river rocks and broken up concrete. And there was a large body of water down there that went to about our waist, in which we had to carry our bikes over. And that was challenging for me. I just kept looking at that water. I'm down there by myself going, they don't really want us to go across there, do they? As my Garmin is continuing to beep that I'm on course, and yes, I must go through that water.
Waist so deep.
Yeah, it was deep. It was deep. And lots of snakes, too. And I didn't know if the snakes live in the water, but there were snakes on the ground all night long. And I just kept thinking, oh, my gosh, I hope there's no snakes in this water.
So I'm curious though, that could really give you some serious chafing and saddle sore issues. I mean, were you able to wring out your shorts or anything like that?
No, I just went in it, with bike shoes on and everything. It actually felt really good to just kind of get some of that mud off of my legs and my hands, and that I was kind of covered in a little bit. Yeah, you just kind of air dried.
So, what are you eating throughout the day and the evening?
I did peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I made a bunch of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and smashed them in my pockets. And that's really what I was eating, that and smash packs, which are these kind of like a liquid smoothie drink, or kind of in the consistency of like baby food, really. And you just kind of squirt them in your mouth. And so those are the two things I was doing. And then scratch. I had a Camel back on, and then I had three bottles on my bike as
Yes.
well.
Just going to ask how you were able to carry enough liquid.
Yeah, that's how I did it, with three bottles on the bike and then the Camel back on my back, which worked. I mean, I definitely was empty when I would come to the stops for sure and have to refuel.
So, what did you have a time schedule? Did you have any goals that you wanted to reach throughout? How did that go?
Well, I really was trying to get as close as I could to the first place woman, and I was really holding steady behind her, which I was really pleased about. And I really didn't want sunrise to come. I know some people want sunrise to come because they don't like it riding in the night, but I just was wishing it wouldn't come because I knew the heat was going to come with that sunrise. So my goal was really to get as close to her as I could, and then at sunrise I went down a big gnarly descent with just big chunks of gravel, and some of it bounced up and hit my bike and hit my foot. And then when I got to the bottom of the hill, I went to pedal, and my front derailleur, I could not pedal at all. My bike was totally locked up, so I had to pull over, and one of those rocks had hit the front derailleur and totally mangled it. So I was stuck in the small chainring. But I wasn't about to quit. I did what I could to try and bend it back to the front, to the big chainring, but it just wasn't going to happen. So my goal went from trying to get as close to that first woman to just holding steady where I was in the small chainring, and just trying to hold on to second place is really what I was trying to do.
So I love this because you were so competitive throughout the night. When the sun came up, how much farther did you still have to go? And what was your mindset as far as catching first place?
Well, I still had 100 and some to go. So my mindset was good. I mean, I never got mad or said, "Oh, woe is me." I mean, I really did want my big chain ring back. Let me tell you, I pulled over quite a few times trying to pry it with a multi-tool and rocks and just anything I could to see if I could get it to, bend it back, but it was
So
not
you
going to happen.
never got the big chain ring back.
No, I did at the very end, thanks to some amazing gentlemen. But yeah, so my mindset was really just to my mantra was, race, ride, finish, and I went from race, ride, finish, and then I went back to race, ride, finish. I wasn't going to give up. I just really wanted to hold on to that second place female if I could.
And did you keep it?
Well, I did keep it, but I kept it with the help of two amazing gentlemen. I about 20 miles from the finish. It was very hot, 94 degrees. There's no trees or anything out there, and I started to feel really dizzy. I'd been out of water for a while, and I remember thinking, "Oh, I've got to pull over here for a second. I'm so dizzy, I can't pedal." Next thing I know, I found myself on the ground. Kind of confused. I I have the texting on my Garmin, and I actually looked over at my bike, and it was my coach saying, keep moving, and I kept thinking, okay, I got to get up. Tried to get up a few times, and my legs just would not let me stand. So I thought, well, I'll just sit there for a while. I'm not sure what I thought was going to happen, but I was hoping that my brain and my body would come back online. And a few minutes later, Morgan and Mike, who I'd rode with in the middle of the night, pulled up and started asking me some questions, which I thought I was answering fabulously. I find out later I was mostly just jibber-jabbering and confused. They gave me a bottle of water, some electrolytes, literally picked me up. Mike was saying, there's two girls, Jamie, and they're hot on our tail. They're right here. And I remember him saying, you gotta finish this thing. And me saying, I don't know, I can't even stand, Mike. So they literally picked me up and put me on that bike. And he said to me, you've worked too hard. I'm not going to let you, you're going to finish this. We're going to get you to the finish line. And they did, George. They started me out at 8 miles an hour, had me sandwiched in between them. And then we got to 9 miles an hour, 10 miles an hour, and pretty soon my body and my brain came back online, and we were flying those last 20 miles to the finish line. And a lot of people thought that I was racing those two gentlemen. I was not racing those two gentlemen. Those two gentlemen saved me and were getting me to the finish line. It's still just unbelievable to me that these two guys that wanted to be in the top 10 stopped their race to help me get to the finish line. Very, very humbled by that.
And not to take away from that or anything, but I just wanted, where did you get your big chain ring back?
Mike is from the military, and he gave it a nice big tug there. He basically bent the crap out of it and
wow.
Got me the big chain ring. There's a video clip of the sound of it. I can't tell you how annoying it was for them to have to ride next to me, because it was, the chain was still rubbing something fierce, but at least I had the small chain ring, so I felt bad that they had to listen to that sound for 20 miles.
So where did you finish overall?
I finished 11th overall. When I came in with those men, it was very important to me that they were in front of me. They were so gracious. They wanted me to go up there, and there's no way. So Morgan finished, and then Mike finished, and then I got 11th overall and second woman in 26 hours.
So they actually got their top 10 because they were 9th and 10th?
Yep, they got their top 10.
Yeah, that would have been pretty sneaky of you to out-sprint them at the finish.
Yeah, it was pretty funny, because as people were watching my dots, they were sending me texts on my computer that said, bury them, you got these guys. And I just started giggling, and Mike and Morgan, said, what's so funny? And I'm like, well, they're telling me to bury you right now. And we all laughed, because there was no way I was going to bury them. I was hanging on for dear life.
So you made some really lifelong friends there.
I sure did. Two amazing guys. Morgan is from Colorado, and he's a coach. Mike actually wasn't accepted into Dirty Kanza XL. He's in the military, had some family members that were killed last year, and the military support group granted him one wish, and his one wish was to do the Dirty Kanza as a single speed. And so that is his story and how he got into Dirty Kanza. And I'll tell you, I've never seen what I saw. To see a single speeder do Dirty Kanza is just unbelievable with one gear. Here I'm complaining that I just have a small chain ring. They have one gear for all those miles. It's just unreal.
So how do you top that next year?
It's funny, because after surviving all this and finishing it, my first thought was, wow, if I can do this, what else can I do? I don't know what else is out there, but I know that I definitely found something that I love, the ultra distance being in that saddle a long time is something that just I really enjoy. So I'm interested in Tour de Dubai before I turn 50. I'd like to come back and do Dirty Cons XL next year as well.
As a second overall woman and top 20, are you guaranteed a spot into the XL? Or do you have to go through the process again?
I'll have to go through the process again. I did get a very encouraging email from Dirty Cons already. But I would for sure do it again.
And how do you recover right now? What are your plans for June and the rest of the summer?
Mostly I want to play and kind of be off of a training quote plan. I've accumulated all of this fitness, so I'd really love to use it to go do some, you know, not races, but just epic rides in the woods. I'm going to do Race Across Oregon for sure. And you know, I just want to have fun and ride my bike.
Well, Jamie, congratulations on a fantastic performance out there. And thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Thanks, George.
From the Over the Top Mobile Studios in San Antonio, Texas, you've been listening to Jamie Van Beek, and I'm George Thomas.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.